I kept reaching for the next thing, next great career move, the next great job. And I rarely ever sat and just listened to myself, listened to what it was that I had inside me. And when I started doing that, the answers came to me.
Hello, and welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. Mary M. Fasillo is a registered nurse and longtime leader in reproductive health care whose work is deeply shaped by her own journey with infertility. What began as a personal challenge became a lifelong calling. Over more than 25 years in infertility care and 35 years in healthcare, Mary has helped build and lead donor egg and third-party reproduction programs across the country. From launching donor programs in major fertility clinics to consulting nationwide on egg donation practices, she has been at the forefront of a field that was still finding its footing. Mary went on to found several organizations dedicated to supporting intended parents, donors, and surrogates, eventually bringing them together under Family Solutions International. Her work has always focused on access, guidance, and ethical care in some of the most emotionally complex areas of medicine. Driven by the ethical questions she encountered throughout her career, Mary later began a PhD program in bioethics, determined to bring both clinical experience and ethical depth to conversations about modern fertility care. Her story is one of compassion, leadership, and a commitment to helping families navigate paths that are rarely simple, but deeply meaningful. You can read more about her in her full bio on revwoman.com. Hi, Mary. Welcome to Revolutionary Woman. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful sunny day here.
Awesome. Okay, so let's get started. So you grew up in Houston, Texas. What was it like for you growing up in Texas?
Well, Houston was a lot different than it is now. Now it's the third or fourth largest city in the country. The metropolitan area has 7 million people. It's crazy, busy, whatever. When I was growing up, it was much, much smaller. Uh-huh. And it was just, I didn't know any different. This is where I grew up. And, you know, we rode our bikes around the neighborhood. We had to come home when the streetlights were coming on. Just the typical suburban growing up years.
Okay. Awesome. So, all right. So you initially started out studying to be a journalist. But then you transitioned from journalism to healthcare and nursing, and you were a nurse for many years. How did that happen? You go from nursing, from journalism to nursing.
Well, you know, it's something that's happening to the young generation right now. So I went to journalism school at the University of Texas at Austin, and I was fortunate enough to get a journalism job on the West Coast after I graduated. It was a really cool experience for me. I moved to San Francisco at 22 years old. Uh-huh. I had a roommate from college that also happened to get a job about the same time in a different industry. So the two of us moved to San Francisco. A third woman that we had met because we had all spent one summer being waitresses in Lake Tahoe, a resort area, she joined us because she also had a job in San Francisco. So the three of us lived in a one-bedroom apartment in San Francisco.
Wow. Okay.
We made no money. We had no money.
Oh,
I mean, we were poverty stricken. We used to walk from our apartment down to Fisherman's Wharf and the place that sells the sourdough bread with the clam chowder in it at 8 o'clock at night. They would sell all the leftover loaves of sourdough bread for like 50 cents.
Oh, wow.
And so we would go and buy, and we would literally live on bread for like the 3 or 4 days before payday. But you know what? You're 22.
Yeah.
It's no big deal. So anyway, I spent a few years being a journalist. I never could get above really the poverty level. And I totally understand it when young people say, you know, I just can't make enough money. And people say, well, you shouldn't buy Starbucks. There wasn't Starbucks back in that day. You shouldn't buy avocado toast. We didn't have avocado toast. I didn't make a living wage.
Right.
I made $1,000 a month in San Francisco and shared a one-bedroom apartment. And each of us paid $333 a month. The apartment cost $1,000 a month.
Wow.
And so that sounds like, wow, San Francisco, $1,000 a month. Not when you make $1,000 a month as your, and then there was taxes.
Right.
So literally 50% of my take-home pay was in rent. And I used to walk to my job, which was a mile and a half away, up and down hills in San Francisco. I had great legs, though. Oh, they were great.
Wow.
And after a few years, I didn't see a way out. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Los Angeles and left journalism and went into public relations, which didn't give me a very big bump in salary. Mm-hmm. And then I had to have a car.
Oh,
so
geez.
After a couple years of that, I said, I've got to do something else. I can't. It wasn't that I wasn't moving up in my career. I wasn't moving up in money in my mm-hmm. career because there wasn't money.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to nursing school as a way to have a job mm-hmm. that I knew was secure, that would pay whatever. Now, let me tell you, when I got out of nursing school, it didn't pay like nursing school does now.
Mm-hmm.
I made more than I did as a journalist, but it wasn't
oh, wow.
this big bonanza. You know, I have friends whose daughters graduated from nursing school and they got out of nursing school and they made like $70,000 a year
right.
and they're 22.
Yeah.
I
wow.
mean, I was making 25 or 28,000 mm. when I got out of nursing school. So I climbed up the ladder in nursing very quickly because the money followed. And that
mm-hmm.
sounds really kind of awful, but I needed to have a wage that could support me. I wasn't
yeah.
married yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went up the ladder. I became, the head nurse, the emergency room. And then I went to another hospital and became trauma educator in the emergency department.
Oh, wow.
And then I moved to north of Miami and became mm-hmm. director of critical care at a hospital there. Then I went back to Houston where I became director of critical care at another hospital.
Oh, wow.
And by this time I was making lovely money
uh-huh.
and, you know, I had a nice place to live and I met my husband and we got married. And then we had twins,
mm.
and I didn't want to be in working at the hospital, even though I had a fabulous job. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I made good money. I was the boss lady, but it was very difficult with small children.
Mm.
And that's how I got into fertility
right.
in 1999
wow.
and became the manager of an IVF clinic.
Okay. You are the founder and CEO of three separate things, Donor Solution, Three Sisters Surrogacy, and a fertility consultancy under the umbrella of Family Solutions International. So can you tell me what they are all about?
Okay, well, after I spent 7-8 years in the fertility field, manager of two different IVF clinics, one in Texas, one on the East Coast, and then I did 3 years of consulting where I told everybody else how to do their job.
Hmm.
I realized that my children were growing up with mom traveling around the country all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually ended up starting my own business in
mm-hmm.
2007, and that was the Donor Solution. So I'd worked at IVF clinics where I had helped recruit egg donors, and we started donor egg programs because donor egg was pretty new at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just allowed me to go ahead, and I started a business under a more of a medical model. So I was looking for donors that would pass the medical screenings at IVF clinics that also had education, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first job in 2007, my first business that I started.
Mm-hmm.
And the second business I started in 2012, and I started doing gestational surrogacy, which means that the person carrying the pregnancy is not genetically related to the baby. So
okay.
it's not her egg. It's
right.
the intended parent's egg and sperm made the embryo.
Right.
We did that because we had so many people that were using our egg donors, and then they had to go somewhere else to find a surrogate. So I thought, well, I'm sitting right here. And
yeah.
that's when we started the surrogacy part.
Okay. On your site, you mentioned a term that I wasn't familiar with, third-party parenting. What does that term mean?
Third-party parenting, think about it. Usually it takes two to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
It takes three to have a baby.
Got it.
So you have a sperm, an egg, and a uterus. You actually need to have a baby. Usually the egg and the uterus belong to the same person.
Mm.
So sometimes people need an egg donor,
mm-hmm.
and so that's the third person in the group.
Okay.
Sometimes they need a sperm donor. Sometimes they need a surrogate. So
right.
that's why it's called third party parenting.
Okay. So has there been an increased number of couples who have come to Family Solutions for help post pandemic?
I would say after the pandemic, it got crazy.
Mm.
The rest of 21 into 22.
Wow.
It's kind of calmed down now. I think a lot of it has to do with the economy. And
mm-hmm.
having been in this business for so long, it's very economy dependent.
Mm-hmm.
People worry about their jobs. People worry about, you know, How my investments going to do when the economy is kind of in flux?
Right.
So I'm used to riding the waves, but after the pandemic, people were like, oh my gosh, I want a family. You know, family is most important. Mm-hmm. I see that now too. The cost factor has really increased so much that it's priced a lot of people out of, especially surrogacy. Egg donation, it depends on some, you know, egg donation can be affordable. If people want a very, very, very expensive egg donor, then it's not affordable.
Mm, got it.
So that's kind of how that works.
Okay, so I know that there are no laws that ban fertility clinics from operating, but have you had people protesting outside of Family Solutions International because of the service you're providing? And how do you handle situations like that?
Nope. Because the thing is, we're helping build families.
Right.
And so if people have an issue with it, then they're taking it directly to the IVF clinic. So we're in an office building, downtown Houston. What are they going to protest that we're helping people have families?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So do you help couples from states that have bans on fertility?
There's no bans on fertility.
At all. Okay. Got it. Okay.
No, there's one state left in the United States where you cannot do compensated egg donation or compensated surrogacy, and that is Louisiana. If it's uncompensated, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But every place else, it's legal. Some places have better laws on the books than others do for surrogacy. And for egg donation, there's literally nothing except the state of Louisiana doesn't allow compensated egg donation. So an IVF clinic in Louisiana can't have a Louisiana donor at that clinic. But their intended parent could get a donor from Mississippi or from Texas because it's not being compensated in the state of Louisiana. The money goes into the bank account somewhere else.
Okay.
So there's workarounds, but you just can't do compensated surrogacy in Louisiana. So there's no bans on it here.
Okay, got it. So what was your aha moment when you realized you wanted to do this?
My aha moment is pretty not very dramatic. I worked for a company that I worked as a consultant and educator for third party parenting across the country. So my job at the time, this was in 2005 to 2007, was to go into an IVF clinic and educate them and help them build their third party parenting program. So this was kind of it when they were starting to get really big, when there would be hundreds of people a year using it. Now there's thousands and thousands. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But I saw the writing on the wall at my company. They started laying off other people that had positions similar to mine, but I was the only one that did third party. These were people that worked on the regular IVF consulting side.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, I better get my ducks in a row. I didn't really want to go back to being the manager of an IVF clinic.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked what I was doing.
Right.
So I said, well, why don't I start my own business? So from January of 2007 until I opened in August of 2007, every time I got on an airplane, I had this little notebook and I would write out my business plans. And I went and took some business building classes, and I learned how to set up my budget. I did all this stuff, and I launched my little mini website on August 14th, 2007, when the internet wasn't quite as exciting as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. It wasn't an aha moment.
Right.
It was a realization that I didn't want to be left without a job and without a plan if I got laid off.
Got it. Okay. So Mary, I listened to a podcast, Awaken Your Inner Awesomeness, where you talked about traveling to Montevideo, Uruguay in 2018 first, then Belgrade, Serbia. From that, you created a side business called Go Beyond the Nest. What made you, first of all, choose those destinations? And how did this start for you?
In early 2018, I was on a business trip, and I picked up this magazine and to take back on the plane and read with me on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this article about digital nomads. Okay, so I had kids who were like in college, was a digital nomad. Mm-hmm. I'm reading this article and it had about five different companies that did this digital nomad thing where they would have a 4 to 6 weeks where you would go X, Y, and Z place and they would have the infrastructure. So they would help, you would pay a fee and they would have an apartment. They would have a co-working space. Mm-hmm. They would offer social activities, whatever. So I applied to one of them and I filled out the paperwork and then they said they wanted to have a Zoom call with me to see if I fit into their, social milieu. Mm-hmm. So I had this Zoom call with them and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And 3 days later, I got a rejection letter that said, "Hi, I don't think that you're going to meet our standards. You might want to try Elder Hostel." Well, that made me mad. And so I ended up trying another one called Hacker Paradise, which has now been bought by somebody else. And they loved to have me. And the choices, they had multiple choices to go, but the one that fit my time frame was Montevideo, Uruguay. So I went literally, let's see, 7 years ago, right about now. I think I left on November 3rd or 4th. I went down to Montevideo. I ended up in a half a block from this gorgeous beach. And it was their kind of fall there because they're on the, you know, South America. And I had this fabulous roommate named Julia, who was from Vienna, and she had lived in Australia for a long time, so she had perfect English, and she was many years younger than me, and we had this fabulous co-working space, and there was like 20 of us, and it was like, oh my gosh, I felt like I was back in college with really the really cool kids. I had a great time. I'd get up in the morning because of the time difference. I was 4 hours earlier than my office. So I would go run on the beach. I would go have coffee. Then I'd go to the co-working space and I would get on my computer. Then in the afternoon, we'd go have drinks. It was so much fun. And I had this epiphany one day while I was walking, you know, back to my apartment. It was about 4 weeks into this journey, and I was standing there at a street light, and all of a sudden my brain went, you know, I have enough. I have enough. All this super striving for more and more and more. I have enough. I'm satisfied with what I had. And it was just a really bizarre moment. So I went back to my apartment and I called my husband on the phone. Thank goodness for, you know, international cell phone calling, and told him this. And he was like, "That's amazing." So the next year I did the same thing and I went to Belgrade and I had the same experience. And I said, I want to bring this experience to an older crowd, maybe the post 50 crowd, that maybe kids are gone and they're looking for their purpose in life, or what do I do next, or what's my next chapter when I have had enough. And when I don't mean had enough like I'm tired of this. I have enough. I've been provided for. I have enough to make me happy and satisfied. So that's where Go Beyond the Nest came from.
Okay, so in the same podcast, you mentioned watching the series called The Midwife. And you spoke about how you saw that service, you know, all that time. It was their whole aura of service that clicked for you, because for you, service brings you joy. So can you say that your career as a nurse initially, then owning a company that helps people start their family, and now having a business that's also about caring for one's well-being, are all rooted in service of others?
I think so. I think that from I had a grandmother. Well, you know, most people only have two grandmothers. I had two grandmothers. So I had a grandmother who, when I was growing up, now she was born in 1903. Okay. So, and she was very vibrant and she did not pass away till she was 97 and she was with the program until like the last minute, but she wanted me to be a medical missionary. And I was not interested in that whatsoever. But I loved my grandmother and I, you know, I kind of went along with her deal. And so I did some volunteer program when I was in high school where we actually went to Central America and we gave vaccinations and we, another crew maybe helped with building latrines and places that did not have bathroom facilities. So I kind of got the bug to help others. And so I think that's where it came from. I tried to push it away when I was a journalist because I felt that was another way to help people. Mm-hmm. But of course it came back. And now that I'm close to what I'd call quasi-retirement, I'm looking for things that that will bring me joy, but also, and I think saying you'll help other people is kind of a nebulous statement. I want to do things that are quiet, that people, you're not trying to stand up in front of everybody and go, look what I did. Right. I just want to be quiet.
Okay.
I just want to do stuff that nobody knows but me and the person that I've helped.
Okay. You also spoke about the why behind this new venture. Can you elaborate more on that?
Oh, well, the new venture has been around for a couple of years. The new ventures, we've already had two programs. Then we went on hiatus. We started pretty soon after COVID and after they kind of opened things up.
Okay.
Then we realized that at the time in 21, 22, people were kind of panicked every time there'd be a new wave of COVID and they wouldn't want to go places.
Right.
So now we've pivoted. I've actually brought on a partner, and we've pivoted to be more of a short-term travel with intention. So I don't want to get too woo-woo about it. But in other words, like, for instance, the original Go Beyond the Nest would be a week-long kind of seminar in a really cool place to help you grow into what your next iteration was going to be.
Okay.
You know, as a retired person, as an empty nester, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
This iteration is less about that and more about adventuring to places you may not want, you maybe not feel comfortable going as a woman by yourself. So maybe you just want to go with a bunch of friends. So the next one we're going to do is, I think, in February, and it's in San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, which is a fabulous place. And a lot of people go there for 2 days and they see the sights or whatever. It's this gorgeous colonial town. We're going to do more. So we'll have some seminar kind of stuff in the morning that you can attend about direction and focus and where you want to be. And then the afternoon will all be like, you can go shopping or you can go on the tour, you can go see the volcano, or you can do any of those things. And then we have another one that will do island in Greece.
Oh, cool.
And so, yeah. So the goal is, I don't want to make it a full-time job because I want to enjoy myself.
Right.
So we want to do 4 trips a year and each of them would have a different theme.
Ah, that's awesome. That sounds really cool. So, all right.
I hope so.
That sounds amazing, actually. So what's next for you?
You know what? I don't know. I've spent most of my many years always looking for the next thing. And right now, I'm kind of like want to contemplate. I'm not retired yet. My main business, I'm selling to one of my employees over the next 2 years. And so I'm going to start sliding out as she takes over. And then the Go Beyond the Nest is kind of a part-time thing. It's like 4 times a year.
Oh, cool.
But my husband and I are traveling.
Okay.
We've always traveled a lot. We have kids who are 27. One lives in London and is married, and we like to go visit her and her husband. And my other child is a son, and he lives in Austin.
Okay.
And he works in the tech world. And so we're just going to kind of figure it out.
Cool.
We bought a condo in Chicago, and we're going to use that as our summer place because we love the vibrancy in the summer, and we'll just see what happens. It's the first time. I'm always a huge planner. So this is the first time I've been like, well, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
That's awesome. So what are your goals for the community you're involved in?
Well, there's my community in Houston, where I've been very involved from a volunteer standpoint in several organizations, a lot of them to do with music. I was most recently the Symphony League's president. I'm on the board of another arts organization, and then I'm also on the board of a university-based arts organization. And in my work community, over the years, I've done multiple volunteer things. I've run support groups, whatever. And at this stage in life, I've kind of backed away from almost all of it to kind of reassess what my highest priorities are.
Got it. Okay. So if anyone wanted to know more about Family Solutions International or even go beyond the nest, how would they go about it?
Well, both of them have websites, familysolutionsinternational.com and gobeyondthenest.com.
Okay, cool. And is there anything you would like to say to my listeners?
You know, I think that if there's one, I'd say, challenge that I didn't realize was such a challenge, it was life is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I kept reaching for the next thing, not the next shiny object, but the next thing, the next great career move, the next great job, the next great thing. And I really, rarely ever sat and just listened to myself, listened to what it was that I had inside me. And when I started doing that, the answers came to me. And so I think a lot of times when people are, you know, quote unquote, highly motivated and you know, blah, 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 that they think they have all the answers. And it took that silence for me to truly find the answers, what to do in this next stage of my life.
Got it. So if you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, would there be one?
Yes. I probably would have done some business things. I was very much a nurse who started a business who was always looking out for everyone. So I made sure my employees were always paid before me. I made sure that, you know, sometimes I was like, ooh, I'm kind of overemployed, but I didn't want to fire anybody or let them go.
Right.
So I was the one that suffered. And not to be like Elon Musk or anything, but I really felt that was detrimental to the growth of the company because I couldn't look at the numbers dispassionately because I always would see the person behind the number. So if I was going to lay off Susie because we really couldn't afford her due to the dip in the economy, that was the business person thing to do. But me, who was like, well, how's Susie going to pay her rent? And this is bad economy and there's no jobs.
Right.
I wouldn't do it. And this is not to make me sound like a saint. I just was so caught up in that. I wish I'd had a little bit more business guidance on the right thing to do. I still think the right thing to do is to keep everybody employed.
Right.
But it was from a financial standpoint, it probably wasn't the smartest thing I've ever done.
Okay. My last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Take the risk. I sound like a risk taker, but I really, really, it was a learning curve. I didn't become a risk taker until I was in my 40s. I would say take the risk.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, wow. That's not till your 40s.
I didn't take the risk until I was in my 40s. Now, other people would look at me and go, oh, yes, you did, but I don't see it that way. I didn't take a risk. I started a business on $27,000 of credit card advances, and I had 2 8-year-olds, and my husband, who is an engineer, was in a precarious job that at any moment he could have gotten laid off.
Wow.
And I started a business in debt.
Wow.
And I paid off all those credit card loans in 1 year.
That's amazing. Okay, so where do you think you get your resiliency from?
I do not think it's genetic. I did not have resilient parents. If it's genetic, I got it from my grandparents. But I do think that it came from the school of hard knocks. I think that just the down and out nature of things, things not working out the way you planned, you know, my poor journalism career, going to nursing school thinking it was going to be the answer and it really wasn't. I will tell you what, I was a very good nurse. I just wasn't a passionate nurse.
Yeah.
I didn't find joy going to work as a nurse.
Got it. That just struck me as like really interesting because building yourself up and having gone through what you went through in your 20s and 30s and now saying, okay, well, you know, this is what I really am passionate about, and I want to continue this. So that's really, I think that's amazing. You know, I think that what you have done, you know, to make sure that even when you may not think so, you have been taking care of people and in all the sectors that you've created. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do realize that you can be a compassionate and empathetic person without having to serve soup at a soup kitchen.
Thank you for coming on my show and for sharing your life and your work and your new venture with me and my listeners. I love what you're doing, especially when it comes to helping families build their families, because there's so many people out there who are not able to. Helping out through your company is really making a big difference. And I love your travel business because it, you know, for people like me who are an empty nester, you know, that's like something I've always looked into, but I've never really thought of doing it. I don't know why, but I think that's really cool that it's like, you know, what's next? And I love that because then you're like, they have something to look forward to and it's something that you know is going to be the next experience, right? And I love experiences. So,
well, I think that the thing about the travel is, and I know a lot of people say this, but I like to travel not, you know, I don't want to go do Rome, Paris, London in 9 days. Mm-hmm. I like to park somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's what was so cool about Montevideo is I was there for 6 weeks. I became part of the neighborhood. The mm-hmm. coffee lady knew my name.
Love that.
I knew where to go shopping for groceries.
Right.
I could go play, you know, I could go run on the beach and watch them play volleyball. Huh. I felt part of the community. And I think that that's travel.
Yeah.
For me, it makes you understand that these people in Montevideo were truly no different than I was in Houston, Texas. They just had different ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. And I love that because I think that that's what brings the world together.
Yeah.
And if more people had those opportunities, and they don't have to be super expensive, mm-hmm. It was a fairly economical experience going to Montevideo for 6 weeks.
Right.
And so that's how my husband and I travel. We just spent a month on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so you become, you know, we were in an Airbnb, right. We became part of the community,
right.
We're there, you know, we're seeing the same people all the time. And I love that. I love becoming embedded.
Right.
And so it's a whole different thing than travel when you're going on a cruise or mm-hmm. something.
Right. No, I totally get it. Yeah, because I remember when I was in my late 20s and I traveled to France and I was actually there for 3 months and I had such an amazing time because, like you said, you're embedded in the community. I knew where to go for my coffee in the morning. I knew where to go, you know, like where the nearest markets were. And I enjoyed it so much that I was like, do I really have to go home? You know, it's like one of those things. But it really, I think it built me up to appreciate, you know, travel and the community. And so that's why I love traveling. I think it makes you aware that, you know, you may not speak the same language, but, you know, you all have the same concerns, you know, and that's great because you can kind of see where they're coming from a different perspective and not just your own. So that's really cool. But
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Mary, thank you again. And I appreciate your perspective on your companies. And I wish you so much luck with the next things that you're doing. And, you know, please keep in touch. And I will catch up with you on another day.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me and letting me do all the talking.
Oh, no, please. You know, I really wanted to get your life out here. And so people can hopefully get inspired to do the same thing that you're doing. All right. Have a great day. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Mary M. Fasillo on RevWoman.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in every other Thursday for another episode of Revolutionary Woman. You can listen to Revolutionary Woman on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just a little note. I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break from being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.